The sun shines at Wembley. Hello and welcome to episode 17, yes, 17 of the Real Football Cast. I'm your host Dan Tracy, and in the next 60 minutes we'll be dissecting all the hot topics in football. As per usual, we'll be discussing what's been going on in the Premier League over the past few days, but in addition to that, there'll also be off-pitch activities that have caught our eye and they'll be getting our attention in the next hour. With the Champions League action taking place later today, it's an earlier than usual recording, but that means it's JS running the channels. JS, how are you, my friend?
Hi Dan. Seeing as you never mention it anymore, I'm JS Leatherbury from Football in the City, which you used to describe as the excellent Football in the City, but that seems to have been dropped now. So I just thought I'd mention that on air.
That's incorrectly assumed that people are aware of that, but you're absolutely right. Feel free to put in your plug. So that's my bad, and that will be in next time round. So I've been told off early. But no, you are absolutely right. And like I say, do visit the excellent Football in the City website because it is an excellent website, and I can't stress that enough. So I best do some social media bits first. We'll lose track of where we are. If you want to get in touch with me, you can. That's Twitter at DanTracy1983. If you want to get in touch with JS, it's at Ball in the City. He's fantastic to talk to on Twitter. Honestly, couldn't recommend it enough. So there you go, JS. An extra plug for you there.
Thank you, Dan.
That's all right, mate. If you want to search me via iTunes, you can. That's Real Football Cast. And if you use that platform, then don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if you're not a fan of all things Apple, then you can also find me on SoundCloud and Acast. Well, the easiest way to find all the links is by going to realfootballcast.com. As you should know by now, the Real Football Cast is sponsored by Loserpool. What is Loserpool, I hear you ask? It's a new game that sees betting turned on its head, with the focus being on the loser. And if that has grabbed your interest, then be sure to visit loserpool.com and create an account, especially as the prize pool is once again £1,000, something you won't want to miss out on. Now, the odds of winning are great, and they're even better if you sign up. So, there we go. Right then, it's time to go live. And let's go to Wembley first. Why not? As we're Tottenham fans, so club buyers aside, Tottenham made a very sorry showing of a previously undefeated Chelsea.
Wait.
Was that performance nothing short of scintillating from Tottenham?
Yes. Basically, I called it completely wrong. I had that down as a 1-1 draw, and you give credit where it's due, and you also have to sort of own up when you've got it wrong. When I saw the respective lineups, so I thought we've just got no chance of winning today. I didn't think we'd lose, but I thought it was a little bit like, do you remember the Liverpool game at Wembley where we packed three men into the midfield?
I do, yes.
And it felt a little bit like we'd only done it, and we had. We'd set up to kind of stop their front three, which actually at that point hadn't been quite as fluid and firing as it was, you know, definitely the latter half of last season yet. And I kind of feel like, given that we've finished above them so much, including last year, beaten 4-1 last year and drew 2-2, I thought it was a little bit weird that we were suddenly not forcing a team, especially at home, or call it home, but what has been our home, to set up more not to lose than to actually try and win. And I think that kind of backfired. And I thought when he put Sissoko and Dier into the midfield, I thought he'd done it to kind of like beef it up, to kind of stop their high press and nullify like Kante and Jorginho's effectiveness. So I kind of thought, you know, what we needed to counteract Sarri ball was to actually play exceptionally quick players, you know, like I kind of expected us to have Son and Lamella on either wing, you know what I mean, to try and kind of counteract the high press by having quick players that can get past them. But happily, I couldn't have been more wrong, and like you say, it was exceptional. I mean, it was just brilliant. I mean, I thought the Kane goal was one of our best of the season, and then only to be topped by Heung-min Son's extraordinary effort. That was Ricky Veer-esque, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was a day, or so say an evening, where everything just sort of clicked. It's a performance that's probably been coming, because we've referenced that, as of late, Tottenham have had to win ugly, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because they've been winning, and I think with the season that we've had in terms of off-pitch sagas and such, you know, it's just been a case of, do you know what, just get the points on the board, and it will happen eventually. Something will click, and you sort of thought, it might not be against Chelsea, because of the position that they will present, but, I mean, from minute one, from second one, we were just absolutely on it, and when we are on it like that, we're just a different beast, aren't we?
I agree, and this is why I thought it was weird that we kind of set up not to lose to Liverpool. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
at home.
I know exactly
because
what you mean.
When we are fit and firing, we're a match for anyone, and this is why I said to you the other week, I was actually happier after losing 1-0 to City, because I thought we played well, and the signs were that we were sort of looking like we might be coming back into form again, as opposed to before that, where, like you just said, we'd been winning ugly, if you know what I mean. I know it sounds a bit counterintuitive, but that's why I said I was happier after we lost to City, because it looked like we were starting to actually play good football again, you know what I mean? And you sort of think, although it's not great, but you kind of think, actually, the signs were there that we were starting to come back into form, given that we, quote-unquote, only lost to City, who are actually still miles ahead of everyone this year, you know? So I think we're looking good. So, yeah.
If we look at Chelsea, that's twice as many games that they've been stifled. They were they were useless come Saturday. Before the international break, they were held at home to Everton. Do they have to change their ideas now? Because is there a certain degree they've been found out, you know, after a sort of a decent start from Sarri? You know, life in the Premier League was all new and everyone sort of fell in love with him. And, you know, they're not out of love with him, but at the same time, they're not that sort of tough nut to crack anymore.
No, I don't quite think so. I just think I think Sarri had in his head that Jorginho works in that position. Of course he did so effectively when he was at Napoli, but when you've got arguably, no, I wouldn't necessarily say the best number six in the world, because that's probably still Sergio Busquets, but one of the top two number sixes in world football, you know what I mean, and you're playing him out of position. I mean, that kind of works at Napoli, because the interchangeable nature of Sarri ball is that, well, I just said it, they're interchangeable, you know what I mean? They can fluidly kind of switch positions, and that's what Jorginho did well. Whereas Kante, maybe it's just a question of time, you know, people are quite reactionary now, aren't they? They're like, you know, Kante can't play there. He's only played like 12 games in that system, you know what I mean? It's hardly like he's played in that position all his career. Having said that, what does seem fairly evident from Chelsea's perspective is that Kante should be playing where Jorginho is, you know, a bit further back, a bit deeper, where he's a little bit more comfortable, where he can sit back, break up play, help link play a little bit more. He's not really a, you know, a more advanced linking sort of attacking player, is he? So I don't know why he's so insistent on that. I don't know. I don't think so, but I would be very tempted to switch Kante back to a further back position, you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, that was going to be my next question, actually. And also, I guess it's sort of hard to say now, but had Kante been in his, in quote-unquote, right position on Saturday, would he have been able to deal with the Tottenham onslaught a bit better? And as a result, would Chelsea have been in the game more?
Yeah, definitely. But then I also think it's one of those what-ifs, a little bit like if we'd have had Dembele fit, for example, you know, he's an absolute beast as well, and probably would have, do you know what I mean, helped counteract that if Kante was further back and if Dembele was fit, you know what I mean? But yeah, I think so, but it felt like two seasons ago again, you know, when we just sort of looked electric at times.
That's
it
right,
was
yes.
more like that kind of performance, whereas last year we still clearly had a very decent season, but it never felt like it caught fire at any point. You know what I mean? And I kind of felt like we looked more like ourselves against City, and then obviously again at the weekend, than we did all of last season, you know? I mean, the Champions League exploits aside, I mean, in the league, obviously, you know.
If we focus on Chelsea and their attack line, Alvaro Morata, is he in danger of joining the pantheon of Chelsea flops in terms of number nines? Because you've got, I don't know, let's reel off Shevchenko, Torres, Kesman, Crespo, Falcao. So many centre-forwards have died a slow death at Stamford Bridge. Is he in danger of being the next one?
It looks like it a bit, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, you kind of think, like, Giroud always looks better when he comes on. You know what I mean? Like, he almost always looks better than Morata does. Morata's clearly a good player. I mean, you watch him play, it's a bit like Llorente for us. You know, he's not scoring goals, but he's still a good player. You know what I mean? Like, he's got good passing, good technique, pretty good positional awareness. I mean, he seems to get caught offside quite a lot. But apart from that, I mean, he does like to play off the shoulder a bit. But yeah, but then I don't know where Chelsea really go with that. You know what I mean? There's talk today of getting in Pulisic, with the expectation of Hazard possibly going to Real Madrid, and I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe Sarri's got a thing in his head. I mean, you have to kind of think, who's Sarri bought in, really? Jorginho?
Well, that's right, yeah. I mean, whether they might chuck another 50-odd million, or maybe probably even more for another step forward and just rinse, wash, repeat, because that's what they seem to do at Chelsea. But then you'd think if they had someone, they just need like another Drogba, but they don't grow on trees, do they? So
no.
I mean, there's been so many examples where it's gone wrong. I think Drogba's probably the only real number nine, in inverted commas, that's actually been a success story. So
I think you're probably about
Costa,
right.
Actually, Diego Costa's not a bad shout.
They seem
to be the exception rather than the rule, don't they?
But then Costa did more than just score, didn't he? I mean, he was a bit of a shithouser, but in one of those kind of ways where you couldn't help but admire it. It was such a bastard. It was kind of like the Sergio Ramos thing. You kind of like, you shouldn't, but you have a sort of grudging admiration for that type of shit housing, you know what I mean? Because they're such an arsehole. It's like they're just so unrepentant about it as well. There's something sort of admirable in that kind of level of it. Even if they had someone like that to kind of like you say, yeah, just rough up opponents and ruffle defences a bit more. You know what I mean? Because it creates more chances. It helps sort of spread a sort of uncertainty in the defence, even if you haven't got an out-and-out finisher. Morata doesn't quite... He is not scoring, and he doesn't have that kind of nastiness to his game, so he's not really adding enough to that team at the moment, really.
No, exactly. I mean, if he was a bit more of a rough edge, then, you know, bruising defenders would also then allow Eden Hazard to sort of pull the strings and pick the opposition apart, so you're not getting that either. You're not getting Morata getting goals and being a nuisance, and then you're not getting, because of that, you're not getting Hazard at his sort of actual real best that he can sort of be so good at. So I think they're sort of losing out on a couple of ways there. But in terms of Eden Hazard, he said after the game, he's intimated as much already that he feels that Chelsea are already out of the title race. 7 points doesn't sound a great deal in the grand scheme of things, but where on earth can they find that ground against a Man City side that are, you know, bowling over teams 4 and 5 with ease at the moment?
Yeah, they can't.
Well, they can't, can they?
They can't. I mean, City are going to win the league. Going to win the league again. You know, they maybe had a couple of drawn games that were slightly unexpected, but apart from that, I mean, what are they on? 40 odd goals. They've barely conceded any. I mean, no one's touching them again this year, you know. I think the top four, having said that, I think the top four now is probably going to be the top four come the end of the season again, you know.
Exact order, or is there any changes in 2, 3 and 4?
No, I think Tottenham will finish second. I think Liverpool, like, they've had an amazing start, and they keep sort of getting results, but they still, I think the only concerning thing for the other top four things, perhaps even including City, is that Liverpool have done it and they still haven't looked amazing yet. You know what I mean? A bit like us. They're kind of like, you know, we've clearly started to hit form now, and hopefully that continues and it wasn't just a one-off. But you kind of think, yeah, Liverpool are the, I hate to say it, because, like, you know, for all of their kind of hype and everything last year, the sum total was that they actually did finish fourth and behind us in the league. But I kind of feel like they will, one of two things will happen with Liverpool now. They'll either find that incredible form again and make a genuine title push, or their kind of slightly patchy-ish performances will eventually catch up with them, and they're due, do you know what I mean? Like, they're due to hit maybe a slightly bad patch without the results, you know?
For them, is there an element of frustration that they keep winning and all they can do is stay on the coattails of City? They can't ever seem to sort of get above them or get to an even keel, because no matter how well Liverpool do, you know, they made relatively light work of Watford on Saturday, City go and do even better at West Ham. So you must think, For God, when are we going to get our break? And that, surely, after a while, if you feel you can't beat them, then your performances might dip a bit.
Actually, sorry, yeah, I should say about them not looking at their absolute best. I think Saturday was probably a bit of an exception. You know what I mean? I think they look really good, given that Watford are actually quite a decent side as well. No, I think Liverpool will have a dip at some point, especially if they go deep into the Champions League again. You know what I mean? I know they've got a much richer squad. I don't mean in terms of expense, but I just mean in terms of depth. You know what I mean? They've got a lot of quality and depth now. But I think the slightly baffling one, I don't know about you, but it's probably like Fabinho. I mean, yeah, how much do they pay for him? 60-odd million?
Bizarre, because
it's weird, isn't it? Like, you know, I think he was kind of coming in with the expectation that he would be a kind of quote unquote like upgrade on, say, like Henderson or Milner or someone in the centre, and he's barely playing, and that just seems like a monumental waste of money.
Absolutely, for someone who's in such hot demand from a whole host of, you know, big European clubs.
Yeah,
and you. When that happened, it sort of happened under the radar, because you thought, oh, wow, like, Liverpool, they've pulled a masterstroke there. And then you think, like, you would almost forget he's a Liverpool player or a squad member.
It's weird.
It's so bizarre. I don't know if it's fitness or there's a lack of trust or something. I mean, what could it be, JS?
Why would you sign him?
Well, absolutely. It actually makes no sense. It's not as if it's like an expensive homegrown player to fill a quota, do you know what I mean? Or a third-choice goalkeeper that you're just filling a gap. There must have been some semblance of logic in the summer to purchase him. So why is there now this disconnect? I think, well, actually, like, we don't need him. I mean, whether it's because they're getting results and they're tried and tested, you know, the players that Klopp knows and trusts, then the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That might be part of it, but surely there has to be opportunities for Fabinho. For a player of his talent, let's not forget, he's not just someone who's overpriced. You know, he's not like Bakayoko went from Monaco to Chelsea, was an absolute flop. You know, there's a good player there. So to not sort of use him, I guess it's a nice...
Although, do you know, weirdly, actually, I think Bakayoko's a pretty decent player, actually. That's another weird one. But if you're not going to... It doesn't help. Do you know what? It's almost like one of those vicious cycles. Unless someone gets injured, he's not getting into the team at the moment.
Well, that's right, yes.
And the longer that goes on, the longer he won't get into the team, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Because you're not going to... you know, it, for example, even say like Moussa Sissoko this season, I mean, he actually played in more games than any of our players at all last year. And it seemed baffling to Spurs fans, you know what I mean? Because he just wasn't the player that we thought we'd sign, when actually at the time he was our club record signing, 30 million or something. That's actually quite depressing when you say it out loud, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
sort of thing. Like, yeah, but anyway, that aside, you know, but he wasn't really starting games. He was coming on like for 20 minutes and stuff to replace someone wherever he was needed, more or less. You know what I mean? He even played wing back and stuff a couple of times. But this season, for whatever reason, he seems to have rediscovered a bit of form. Pochettino's clearly seen it and has actually started quite a few games. And surprise, surprise, he actually is suddenly starting to look much closer to the player that we thought we'd signed. So you kind of think, like, it's a similar thing with Fabinho now. You wonder if he does get a run in the team, will he suddenly start to look like the, what was he, about 60 million or something?
Something like that, you know, two Sissokos.
Yeah, exactly, two Sissokos worth. Would he suddenly start to look a little bit more like the player they thought they'd signed? I don't know.
It's a difficult one. I mean, the only way he starts playing is if Liverpool, you know, hit a dip in form and then Klopp thinks, I need to mix things up. But then if a player's on the periphery and getting minutes off the bench here and there, that player's not necessarily going to have the impact that Klopp needs. So just like the Sissoko sort of scenario from a couple of years back, it was 20 minutes here, off the bench, 15 minutes, and then
he's
a bit rusty. He doesn't, like, turns in a 5 or 6 out of 10 and it's hard to sort of get people off his back.
And then it becomes worse, doesn't it? And the pressure builds and all the rest of it.
Of course.
So, with Fabinho, is it partly a tactical thing though? I mean, do Liverpool still have a kind of deep holding midfielder?
I don't think they do really. I mean, in the sense they're playing sort of Shaqiri in midfield, so that's one of the spot up for grabs, isn't there? So you're not really.
And Henderson and Milner don't play that. Not that deep, you know what I mean? Whereas at Monaco, he was playing more or less in a pivot, you know what I mean? But a single pivot in front of the defence. And he was like a real deep player, you know, like a proper number six, you know. Maybe it's just a system thing, which again, therefore begs the question, why would you sign him?
Well, it's bizarre, really, isn't it? I mean,
Anyway, I think we've discovered we don't know why.
Yes.
We don't know why they signed him. We don't know why they're not playing him. Apart from, it's probably a system thing, which it's like the chicken and the egg. It goes back to why did they sign him? And it's all a bit bizarre. So, yeah, I don't think we've got anything to add to that.
No, but we'll keep an eye on the Fabinho Chronicles and see what happens over the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that.
I've got a question now. Will Man City, I know they finished last season with 100 points, can they finish this season with 100-plus goal difference?
Oh.
They're on plus 35 at the moment with a third of the season, so they have to repeat that over the next two thirds. So you're looking at wins of, I don't know, like 3-0 per game. They're not going to win that every game, but, you know, they're scoring a hell of a lot of goals and not really conceding that much. So is that something that is feasible?
Yeah, of course it is, but I can't see them when you think about it. Like you said, yeah, it's like just over a third of the season gone. I can't see that they're only going to concede another 10 goals. You know what I mean? They'll probably score as many again. I just can't see them stopping scoring. There's no reason as to why they shouldn't, you know, unless every Premier League team suddenly goes and raids like all of Europe's top defenders. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, and even then they'd probably find a way through. I'm gonna say they'll just miss out. I'm gonna say they'll get to like 97, because I just think them only conceding 5, as have Liverpool. I mean, their defence has also been incredible, as we were just talking about them. But I can't see them only conceding another 5 over two more equal amounts of the same period or whatever you call it. Do you know what I mean? I just can't see it happening, you know.
Okay, then. I'll expand on the question very slightly. So if they can't get 100-plus goal difference, could they set the Premier League record for least goals conceded? So I think it's 18, is it, under Chelsea? So they've got 13 goals left to concede in a two-thirds of the Premier League season. Is that something they could do? Only concede, say, 17 goals, which I guess it would then go back to the...
No. I think they'll get close. But they occasionally have those random games where it's like 5-2 and stuff, you know.
That is fair.
This is before the season drags on and you get tired players, tired defenders who make mistakes. So I'm trying to think, actually, have City actually got that much strength and depth in defence?
Well, Mendy's injured again.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because they seem to, under Pep Guardiola, slightly bizarrely, I think something like they've spent 250 million quid on defenders or something. You know what I mean? It's like, it's by far the bulk of their spending. Do you know what I mean? Like, they've barely spent anything under Pep on midfielders and attacking players. They've mostly signed defenders, but I'm actually trying to think, like, yeah, exactly. You say, so, like, Mendy's out injured. I mean, Kompany's...
Well, he's like fourth choice now, isn't he, really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you took City's defending options, at left-back, you've got Mendy, but he's injured, so then you've either got Delph, who would go back to left-back, or Zinchenko.
Right. Zinchenko, yeah, but I had this debate with someone last year, because I was saying about Zinchenko, and they were absolutely insistent that he's a winger as opposed to a defender. But then I suppose Fabian Delph is as well, isn't he, really, by nature?
Yeah, well, it was just like when they played Jesus Navas at left-back, do you know what I mean? It's just...
Oh, yeah, God, that was weird.
Yeah, it was weird. So then you've got that side of the pitch, then you've got Walker and Danilo on the right, and then centre-backs, and I guess either of those two can play centre-back if need be, but then you've got Stones, Laporte, Otamendi, Kompany. So whether they feel they need to buy a defender in January again, I don't know. But I mean,
I just kind of think, like, as you alluded to, if they get a couple of injuries, they're kind of struggling a little bit, aren't they? Only in the same way like Spurs would be. You know what I mean? If, like, well, Trippier did have a knock, didn't he, the other week? But do you know what I mean? We'd kind of be screwed at right back, definitely at left back. You know, aside from maybe playing Moussa Sissoko there, which again I have seen last season. But yeah, I'm just trying to think, because you think about most teams, and they'll have like four or five options for most positions, won't they? Or at least like players that are fluid enough to kind of fill in. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've only really got like a couple of strikers, but Heung-min Son could play there. Probably Dele Alli could if we were really struggling, or you'd expect Moura probably could, or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, we wouldn't struggle. So you could have, say, for example, four or five players for one player in that position. Similarly, in the middle of the field, there's like Dier, Winks, Eriksen can drop deeper if need be, Sissoko can play there, Dembele, Wanyama, you know. But when it comes to defenders, I wonder why clubs don't stock as much. Do you think it's because they get injured a little bit less than players that probably normally do a little bit more running? But then again, That brings up another question of, in the modern game, especially with wing backs. That's what we're saying about City. So, for example, if Walker got injured, you've got Danilo, and then what else? You know, you're going to struggle, aren't you? And Ditto on the left.
I think in terms of why clubs buy less defenders, I think it's because at its most sort of rudimental level, goals win you matches, don't you? So you need yeah. more attacking options than defending options, really.
That's another whole debate. I'm actually like a bit of a defence advocate because, like, in the most literal sense, goals win you games. Yes, but
yes, exactly.
So can defenders.
Of course.
And keepers. I don't know. I mean, yes, you literally need to score, but then having said that, you also have to stop the other team scoring to win a game, you know, or at least less than you. So, I don't know. That's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, Chelsea won the league with quite a defensive team 1 year, didn't they? I don't know. It's like the sort of thing I came up with was like, what's more important in cricket, batting or bowling?
Oh, it's probably bowling, to be honest, isn't it?
Do you reckon? But it's runs that win you matches, isn't it?
Yeah, but then
that's what I'm saying. That's my kind of like.
Yeah, I've got to guess my own notion, really, haven't I?
So that's kind of like my. Not metaphor, but like my comparison. You know what I mean?
No, I think that's a fair point. I kind of think
football is the same as that. You need to, mind you, I'm not sure. Maybe that's a terrible one because I'm not sure what the equivalent of goals would be: wickets or runs. Anyway, let's move on.
Let's stay in Manchester then, because if we've seen the sublime through Manchester City, we're seeing the ridiculous at the moment through Manchester United. West Ham will be sick of the sight of City as they were dealt another huge thumping at the weekend, while United fans will be sick of the sight of Jose Mourinho as they had to witness another drab draw at Old Trafford. Mm-hmm. Where, I mean, that point actually sent them up the table, so at least they're seventh. But, yeah, I mean, what is it at Man United at the moment? I mean, these, and not only that, these draws, they feel like defeats because you get teams like City, mm-hmm. Liverpool who are winning. The gap already is so, it's outrageous, really, for a team of their stature.
I'm not being funny, but this this is a little bit where I do think, and we're both part of the media, and I hate kind of using the term, but I think we know the type of media we're referring to.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if after 13 games, Richo Pochettino, or even Jurgen Klopp, actually, To be fair, he's already started getting that, will his job be under threat if he doesn't win something this year? You know what I mean? But if Pochettino or Klopp or probably even Sarri, to be honest, you know, if they were 14 points off City after 13 games, they would be putting him under the most immense pressure. Whereas Mourinho, it's just kind of like, oh, it's Mourinho. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why he isn't getting the same kind of pressure from elements of the media that other clubs do, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I don't know if it's his stature that goes before him. He's almost getting something of a free pass, but I think it's just going through the motions, really, isn't it? Because everyone sort of knows that it's the last days of his empire as a, I don't know, maybe a top world-class manager, but it's just like a non-story now, isn't it? Like, when I saw the results, it's like, oh, it's no real surprise. It's not like, oh, you know, Palace have got a great result. I mean, obviously, they did get a great result. Shouldn't take anything away from what they did, but from the dross that United have been serving up this season, you just go, oh, okay, well, here we are again, really. So, I mean, can they... what's salvaging their season? Is it finishing six? I mean, Everton have got ahead of them now, but is that the best they can hope for? I mean, what else can they... I don't know what else they can dream for, really. They've not really set the Champions League alight. When you watch them in action, it's been another...
Mind you, they've got young boys tonight. You've got to think that's got to be at least 3 or 4-0, surely.
It has to be, doesn't it, really?
Do you know what I mean?
Just like, take the pressure off them somewhat. But it's just, what is wrong with United? Is it...
So it's Mourinho. It's the negative culture that seems to be completely pervasive at there, and it's a little bit like a rotten stench. You know what I mean? It's one of those kind of things that isn't getting better, and because it's not getting better, it's getting worse. So I know that sounds
quite, you're absolutely right though.
Stupid, but sometimes things can just level, you know what I mean. You can kind of get a few decent results here and there, but 14 points off the top after 13 games. That can't be right. They need to, I think they need to bite the bullet, get rid of Mourinho, and then bring someone else in. You know, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, you know. I think it is. Whether it's January or end of the season, we'll have to wait and see. But someone who has bit the bullet was Fulham, and they, I guess, rolled the dice, and it's come up trumps already in the sense that they played out a highly entertaining clash at Craven Cottage, a six-pointer early in the season, and Claudio Ranieri's come out on top. So, you know, I think the ends have justified the means in the very short term. Obviously, we have to wait and see if they stay up, but Southampton, they lost by the odd goal. Is that a result that has just bought Mark Hughes a little bit more time? Because say if it was like a 3-0 defeat, then you'd think, right, okay, maybe it's time that we need to roll the dice as well. Has that manner of defeat, you know, just a goal in it before, okay, we'll go again at the weekend, because they do face Man United, and if there's any, there's a chance there could be a result there, who knows, but is that just the result that has given them the one last opportunity, perhaps?
I think Hughes will be all right, and I think Southampton will be all right. I still think Huddersfield are probably going to go down in their place, you know what I mean? I don't know about Fulham. I mean, they've got a really good set of players there, you know? Do you know what I mean? They made some excellent signings in the summer, and Sessegnon seems to be finally kind of like settling in or finding his rhythm in the Premier League. But you kind of look at them, they've got a decent goalkeeper, they've got some really decent defenders, you know, Fosse Mensah's all right, Alfie Mawson, you know, they sort of brought in like Schürrle and Seri, and also like Le Marchand is a good option in defence as well. I was struggling to see how they weren't doing better. Do you know what I mean? Like, I really thought they were going to be like Wolves. Not necessarily like, you know, quite as strong as Wolves, but I genuinely thought they'd be comfortable kind of mid-table this season.
I think, I don't know if it's, you kind of, it's maybe a bit of naivety in terms of tactics, also the chopping and changing didn't help, you know.
One defeat led to three changes,
then led to another three changes. I think they just needed a bit more sort of continuity and cohesion at the back. That maybe would have given them a few more points to where they were. But I think, I don't think it's the players they bought. I think they bought well. I just don't think the system that they set out in the first sort of few months of the season got the best out of them. And I think Ranieri...
Ranieri will keep them up. Yeah. I'd say almost certainly, to be honest. He's a very... Well, we know he's a great manager. He'll definitely keep them up, I reckon. I felt that was a bit harsh on Janovic. You know, I always think that's a bit harsh when a manager brings a club up and then they get sacked after a third of the season. You know what I mean? It's I do think that's a little bit harsh, but yeah, I think he'll stay up. I think Southampton's struggling really as well. I think they'll probably lose to United at the weekend. If they somehow pull off a result, you'd have to expect Mourinho surely on, well, last chance swing, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, that could be, not quite a six-pointer, but that in itself is a must-win game for both teams, albeit for slightly different reasons, but both managers will go into that game with stock quite low, so, you know, something's got to give there. In terms of the weekend's televised football, it really was a case of contractual obligation sort of games, wasn't it? Not the best ones, some ones for the diehards. No. Wolves at home to Huddersfield, Burnley at home to Newcastle. But those results that have taken place, they've sort of compacted things at the bottom even further. I mean, Wolves at the moment, just 1 point from 15. So, impressive start has managed to absorb these poor results ever so slightly. But at the same time, is there concern now for Nuno Espirito Santo? Because the sort of, the ruts kicked in, the bubble was burst, so to speak. You know, this is where it really becomes about battling in the Premier League, isn't it?
Yeah, but no, I think they'll be fine. I mean, they can't have as squad as good as theirs is, and that kind of, what is it, like 8-9 point gap or whatever it is in the table at the moment between them and the bottom three. You can't imagine that all do you know what I mean? Or like, actually, I'm just looking at it now, or Palace, Burnley. I don't think they'll, even already, I don't think all of those teams will overhaul 8 points over the course of a season.
Yeah, I mean, I guess also there's enough teams below them to for Wolves to sort of have that little wobble.
That's what I mean. I think they'll be fine. 16 points for a team, let's say, that is battling relegation, quote unquote, after 13 games is ease. I know they've dropped off massively over the last kind of 5-6 games, but you also have to think, spread that over the course of the season, and that's 48 points.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? They'll be absolutely fine. I was really surprised by Huddersfield beating them away, though, because Huddersfield have not looked good before that.
No, they haven't.
Or barely at all.
David Wagner always says, well, before this sort of runs happened, every week on Match of the Day, he'd say, I thought our team played really well, we just didn't get the result that we deserved. And you think, well, I don't think you did. I think that's just sort of towing the company line and trying to keep the morale high, even though results haven't gone their way. But I think Wolves weren't great, though. I think it was probably the worst that I've seen Wolves play this season. Mm. They weren't on it at all. So Huddersfield, credit to them, got the, you know, were the better team and got actually the result that they deserved. But
yeah, agree. I definitely agree. I was just surprised because
absolutely.
I think they'd only won once before that all season, hadn't they? And you kind of, you sort of looked at Wolves away and you thought that's pretty much a banker for Wolves. But no, like you say, they've had a drop in form. No, I'm not concerned for Nuno Espirito Santo. I just call him like the Catholic prayer thing. I can never remember his full name. But yeah, that was a bit of a shocker, really, you know.
So Huddersfield have got 7 points from possible nine. Newcastle have done even better. 9 points from possible nine. Where's that come from? Because they were looking, you know, a bit early to say dead and buried, but they were really lackluster in the first 2 months of the season, but things have turned at the right time for Rafa Benitez's men. I mean,
it's unbelievable. I mean, what is that?
Where does that come from?
Three on the bounce?
Yes. I mean,
so looking at the table again, they would have been on, what, 3 points?
Yeah, sounds about right. I mean, they're
13
now.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
3 points from 10 games, is that right?
That is right, because they only played 3 matches.
Oh my God, that is appalling. Fucking hell. Again, I think they've got good players, you know what I mean? Like, they shouldn't be struggling, you know. They've done really well recently. They clearly need a bit more investment. But it's that constant turmoil of the Mike Ashley regime. Like, will they get it? I'd say probably they won't. But they need a bit of a boost in January just to start kicking on a bit, because Newcastle, when you think about, you know, they're not a big club in terms of what football Twitter would now call a big club, but they are a big club. They've got a massive stadium, they've got a diehard fan base, and they shouldn't be just getting by season on season. They should be at least kind of where Everton are, you know what I mean? Like, they should be, They should be around that bunch of clubs. You know what I mean? It should be like Everton, Newcastle should be constantly kind of battling at least for the Europa spots, you know?
Well, if you look at Newcastle last season, they finished 10th. So that would have been the perfect platform to go, do you know what?
Exactly.
Let's build up on that. Let's kick on. If we can get 7th or 8th this season, you know, we're going up the
Exactly.
Table.
Yeah, exactly that. But There's no stability. There never has been under Mike Ashley. And I mean, to put this into context for how long that thing has been going on, I went to Newcastle away with my stepdad about, oh my God, I reckon it must have been eight years ago at least. And It was 1-1. It was really grim. Trip to Newcastle in December, and it was 1-1. And they were booing their team, the Newcastle fans, when it was 1-1. And you kind of think, like, that's weird. And it's not like it's not like I Newcastle fans are far from fickle. You know what I mean? They're quite demanding. Probably a little bit less so nowadays, but they've got every right to be, because they should be doing a lot better than they are for a club of their stature. You know, you kind of think about it. Even sort of 10, definitely 15 years ago, our the people we were competing with on that kind of level for similar places were Everton, Aston Villa, and Newcastle. You know what I mean? And you kind of like, you used to actually fear trips to Newcastle and Villa and who else did I just say?
Everton.
Everton, sorry, yeah, you know what I mean. Everton's still a tough one, but they're the only one of those kind of three or four left. We've obviously kicked on massively since then, and you know Everton have done okay. They've sort of not really kicked on, but they haven't dropped backwards, have they, either? Whereas Newcastle had, and they anyway. So I went to that game. I think it was Damien Duff scored like a 93rd minute winner or something. Everyone went mental. And as we were walking out, I said to my stepdad, they're going to go down this season. I think they were about 8th or 9th at the time. It just felt like a poisonous atmosphere there. You know what I mean? It just felt all wrong. Like the club felt kind of rotten inside and out, a little bit like we were saying about United now. And whilst they seem to have slightly improved that, they're not doing enough. They, you know, Mike Ashley needs to either really get involved, because he is a rich man, either bring in some investors so they can actually, you know, kick on, bring some players in to push them up the league a bit, because it's like a snowball effect. If they start doing that, they'll start to reach a, you know, an ever expanding Premier League global audience. They'll have increased revenues, and then it carries on from there. And I just don't understand it. For me, he needs to sell, put some money into, you know, playing staff, and actually back Benitez, who has done a fantastic job with what he's had at Newcastle, and help them kick on a bit.
Well, yeah, if Mike actually showed the same sort of interest in his club than he does buying up the high street, you know, buying shops like Evans Cycles and House of Fraser. Do you know what I mean? Be in a much better position, because
yeah,
it's either we're going to be living in a Mike Ashley high street across the country with every other second shop owned by Mike Ashley, or Newcastle are going to sort of suffer for his lack of investment. But it's just the way of the world, isn't it, unfortunately? Let's move on to our Loserpool picks of the week, because I've still got some other bits to do before the hour closes. So JS, the floor is yours once more. Can you offer up a loser banker? More importantly, can you carry on your 100% run since we've started this? So
who did I have last time?
was it Southampton?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it was. So had a
lucky one on that.
Yes, you did. There's quite a few iffy games this week, but there's probably still a couple.
I'm going Bournemouth, sorry.
I thought that would be the case. Yeah,
I think the other bank is probably Fulham, to be honest, away at Chelsea. I still can't see. I know Fulham have got Ranieri, and Chelsea had a bit of a blip maybe the last couple of games, but they'll still have too much for Fulham, I think, at home, you know.
Yep, that's fine, because that's the one I was going to go for. So you've
But yeah, Bournemouth for sure. 100. Yes.
I mean, about Bournemouth, they were a little bit unlucky on Sunday to lose to Arsenal. Fantastically finished their own goal by Jefferson Lerma, but they've now lost.
Oh man, wasn't it?
What was all that about? I mean,
it's amazing. It was though, wasn't it?
It was really good. They've now lost by the odd goal at home to United and Arsenal. So as good as they have been this season, they're the kind. If they ever wanted to be a bona fide top six contender, like Everton, are sort of wanted to be in that bracket, and because they are six, they're the games you really have to win, don't you, to really be considered?
Yeah. Definitely, but then if you're beating Arsenal at home, you know Arsenal is still a good team. I know they're a little bit off the pace, but I think Emery's definitely got them looking a little bit better again. United should be beating them. Really, you think about the wealth of resources both Arsenal and United have. I don't think that's that much of a gutter, to be honest. I don't think really Bournemouth... it's going to sound really harsh, but I don't think Bournemouth should be expected to finish above really any of the top seven.
No.
Not really, you know. I mean, who? All right, let me put it this way. Who should they be finishing above? With all the wealth of resources or great structures, i.e. Spurs, out of City, Liverpool, Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, United or Everton?
Oh, no one, really. They should... None of them, their probably. Natural high, I guess, the level they can really obtain to is eighth, if we're being honest.
And I agree.
There's no shame in that at all, but if they can finish above Watford, then that's success for them. If they could, it's just on the fringes of the Europa League. They almost need another of that big six or seven to have a nightmare season, like Everton did last year, so Burnley finished seventh. That's the way they're going to finish in the top seventh. But
exactly, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if they can finish the top eight, that's, again, the progress bit by bit is continuing. And then, say, 2 years, 3 years down the line, then why can't they really have a proper crack at the top six or seven? That might need to come with a new stadium.
It depends. Yeah, exactly. It depends how well run they are. Because you look at, like, Spurs, again, it's probably going to sound a little bit like, not controversial, but a little bit sacrilegious, given how much I love the club. But out of all of those clubs I just listed again, actually, who should Spurs be finishing above?
Well, yeah, if you ask the same question.
Everton, that's it, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, I guess, well, yeah. Everton certainly, I mean, if all things are equal, they shouldn't really be finishing above Man United. You can almost make the case for Arsenal as well. So,
well, no, definitely Arsenal. I mean, maybe not once we're in the new, not once we're in the new stadium, but you know, Arsenal took a number of years to pay theirs off. I can't see Levy all of a sudden ripping up his rule book and deciding we're going to suddenly, you know, turn into, like, or even what Liverpool have done, you know what I mean? Suddenly buy loads of £60 million players or spending £75 million on a defender, you know what I mean? I just can't see that happening at Spurs. We don't have the money and resources of City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal or United. And the fact that we've done it in the way that we've done it is proof that it can be done if you put the right structures in place and you make gradual improvements season by season. Do you know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely.
So, yeah.
But let's recap then, because my brother's also radioed in with Everton to lose at Liverpool. Just quickly also, JS, are you somehow surprised or not surprised that the fixture computer seems to be conveniently pumping out all these derbies on Sunday? We've got the West London derby, the North London derby, the Merseyside derby, all conveniently one after the other on Sunday. I mean,
it's almost as if football is run by television.
Yes, I thought that might be the answer.
So
yes, but what can you
do? The more suspicious-minded amongst us might think that.
The cynic certainly will. As I was saying, my brother's gone for Everton to lose at Liverpool. JS has gone for Bournemouth to lose at Man City. I've gone for Fulham to lose at Chelsea. So three away defeats is what we're hoping for. We'll see if they come true.
I'm not hoping for it. It would be amazing if Bournemouth beat City away.
In the confines of our Liverpool 100% picks of the week, JS.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Absolutely right. It brings me a sense of pride.
That's absolutely right. So we'll come away from the Premier League quickly. There were some other fixtures. I know Brighton Leicester shared the points. Everton got the better of Cardiff. But I just want to get your thoughts, JS, on the Copa Libertadores and the fact that that fixture seems to be almost cursed. The first leg, there was a deluge of rain that postponed it. The second leg, we're meant to be seeing the best of South American football. Unfortunately, we're seeing the worst, aren't we? So,
yeah, it's a huge missed opportunity for South American football in general. I mean, I was chomping at the bit when that fixture got confirmed. I just thought, like, because I know for a number of years they had a very weird system. An Argentinian guy was actually explaining it to me, where teams from the same country couldn't meet each other in the final. Basically, I don't know 100% how the system worked. Perhaps they were, you know, it was more like the old Champions League, where you're only allowed the actual champions from each country. Do you know what I mean? Something like that. But he was saying that's why there has never been a Boca River Plate final before this year. You know, in its 63, I think, the first one, something like that. I was gagging for this. You know what I mean? As a football purist, I just thought this is going to be king amazing. And the first game was, actually. It was a great game. Did you watch that one?
I did, unfortunately. That's why I was really looking forward to the second one.
So it was brilliant. It's on that, what's that new free sports channel thing? It's called Free Sports, isn't it? Yeah. They really, really use their imaginations when coming up with that. What do? We give free sports. What should we call it? Oh, free sports, cool. But it was great. I watched that. They only had a single commentator. They clearly didn't have a massive budget, but it's free. You get what you pay for. And actually, I found it quite refreshing. You know what I mean? With the lack of like 20 million different pundits, it was actually quite good. And the guy clearly had a passion for Latin American football. And it was brilliant. I mean, it really was a brilliant game. The atmosphere was incredible, despite the fact that no away fans were allowed. And then, you know, what happened a few days ago made what the Liverpool fans do to the City fans seem like a Disney version of Sin City. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was so minor in comparison. But it actually weirdly got me to thinking, I don't know what you think about this, but do you reckon that Liverpool City game should have been postponed?
I think the difference was the fact that the players on the weekend actually had injuries because of the actions of, you know, glass being broken.
Yeah.
So, I don't, it's a tough one. I can see the point you're trying to make, but I think the game going ahead in the Champions League was probably still the right decision, because I don't think City physically got any injuries. I know mentally they probably were definitely...
Yeah, that's what I mean. It definitely shook them, didn't it?
Yeah,
and I don't think that's right. If you get your team bus smashed up on the way into a fixture, you do kind of think maybe postpone it for a day or something might be quite useful. But yeah, I don't know. I thought the Copa Libertadores... I mean, there's a great... journalist working out of Brazil called Andrew Downey. He's basically just saying their federation just doesn't get it right, basically. He said a lot of it's down to the federation. Obviously, you can't be responsible for the fans, but you have to wonder, like, why haven't they made a safe road in for them or something? Do you know what I mean? Like, the police, organise the police so they can't... You know, you've got to think, in the 21st century, in a final that, for the first time in forever, the whole world was watching, because I couldn't even name the finalists from the Copa Libertadores from last year, could you?
No.
That's what I'm saying. But it was, because it was Boca and River, first time ever, it was suddenly of global interest, wasn't it? I mean, I don't ever remember it getting a build-up like it did this year. And it's such a huge missed opportunity for them. And all they needed to do was maybe make a police, or even if it's that extreme, get an army cordon and make sure the team can get into a stadium safely for a game where the world is watching. It just seems mad, you know?
It does, unfortunately. What a missed opportunity, because, you know, we look at the landscape of global football and, you know, Europe has so much of the power base. You look at the Club World Cup and it's almost a bit of a non-tournament, because it's just so much of a disparity between each of the continents. But that kind of game would put South American football back in the limelight, and then you would have had one of those two in that tournament going up against Real Madrid. It would have made for a real showpiece, but
it's opportunity
miss, isn't it? So, you know,
I couldn't agree more, sadly. So, you know, all we can hope for is when it finally does go ahead is that it's a really good game. You know... I don't even know how they're going to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't even know how they're going to get it on. They postponed it again. Oh, I don't know. I don't even know when it's going to be. Is it Sunday, I think?
And then
it was postponed again, and they haven't even announced a new date yet.
No, it just says to be prepared.
Do you know what they should do, really? What I would do in that situation is play at a completely neutral venue.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, in a different continent, like Japan or something. Just get over and done with.
That would work. Or I was going to say behind closed doors, and I know that would take away from the amazing atmosphere, but... You know, either River Plate or the organisers didn't do enough to protect Boca going in. And so they were right to postpone it. They were right, actually. They sort of did the right things. Like, they didn't allow away fans to either of the games. And that was clearly a good decision in retrospect. You know what I mean? I thought it was going to be a bit weird, but it wasn't, because each team gets the same advantage at home, you know. But yeah, I agree, Dan. I just think, unfortunately, it's a huge wasted opportunity to, like you rightly say, put Latin American football right back on the map, you know.
Yep, because their
players were exceptional, and the first game was stunning. It was a brilliant game, you know, as you would expect. All the cliches, loads of flair, beautiful free flowing attacking football. And yeah, we're all, as football fans, missing out, and none more so than their fans in their country.
Absolutely. One of the scenarios where football was not the winner, unfortunately. And with that, we've hit the 60 minutes. Our time is up. JS, an absolute sterling hour as always. Thanks ever so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
Thanks very much, mate. We'll do it again soon, I hope.
Perfect. Yeah.
A little bit of admin from me. Like I said at the start of the show, the odds of winning the loser pool prize pool are great. They're even better if you sign up. So visit loserpool.com and don't forget. And with that said, it just leaves me to say that my name's Dan Tracy. This is The Real Football Cast in association with Loserpool. And until next time, goodbye.